Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Is that the City Council consent to the appointment of Eric Winstrom as Chief of Police for the Pensacola Police Department.
Move the approval.
Second.
I think we have moved by Councilman Bear, seconded by Councilman Moore.
Who can second the fastest?
The question I have is, if the statistics the mayor has been putting out is true, why was Chief Randall fired? Because obviously, he did a good job if crime in all categories has been greatly reduced. So I have a problem with that because it seems like that he did a good job.
Sherry Myers, of course, is a congresswoman, councilwoman emeritus. She is not on council, but she still shows up a lot. And, you know, she was the several different times she spoke, she's, I don't know, working on herself. I'm not quite sure what to say. Constantly talking about, I'm trying to have peace as she's there. Finally, by the end of the day, she had kind of lost a little bit. I mean, she would acknowledge, you know, she was angry over something we'll talk about maybe tomorrow. But that's not an unfair thing to ask. You hear what she said? You know, the mayor is touting the drop in crime. Look at us, you know, we're one of the safest cities in America, and we've had an across-the-board drop in all kinds of crime. That's what across-the-board means. So crime has gone down. PPD is amazing. Pensacola is amazing. And Cherry Myers is like, so why'd you fire the chief? It's not an unfair question to ask, but you always have to be prepared for the answer, right? Just because something's a good question doesn't mean that the premise behind the question turns out to be true. You know, the premise being that, you know, Chief was doing great and therefore we have a crime drop. There's a couple of different answers that might be forthcoming that could satisfy that press and debate. We should call that a press and, you know, wanting more information or wanting more explanation. One would be, well, you know, maybe the crime dropped, but there were other problems that were more significant. I mean, you know. Because you might say that a different police chief might have even had a better drop in crime or had a similar drop in crime, but also other problems wouldn't have manifested, right? I mean, that's one possible answer. Another possible answer is that the drop in crime is not unique to Pensacola. Or, you know, maybe there's just completely unknown facts about the employment of Chief Randall and Mayor D.C. Reeves that made it so he just didn't feel comfortable working with him for whatever reason. I don't mean comfortable like, you know, Eric did something bad. I just mean, you know, the mayor's entitled to have his people. Elections have consequences, right? And we hear that all the time. And everybody who works in the administration serves at the pleasure of, the president or the governor or the mayor. But again, it's not an unfair question to ask. So Jen Brayer isn't exactly going to answer the question directly, but she's going to ask about the subject and talk about it briefly with Eric Winstrom.
So I think that there is, because there's been a lot of talk this week about the reduction in crime, I think that we are just following a national trend that is going on right now. As a matter of fact, I think the, I can't think of what magazine, but a big publication just did this week a recognition that there's been a somewhat reduction in crime across the country. that tends to be the way it works, doesn't it? That we kind of follow larger trends than within cities, or is it more confined to within cities?
So what she's saying is, and you know, I know every time we do something well in Pensacola, we want to kind of celebrate it. And so a drop in crime, we're like, woohoo, we rock. Well, but what if everybody rocks? You know, what if there are major changes going on in culture in America that are producing less and less crime? And we're the beneficiary, just like everybody's the beneficiary. Not that we are particularly amazing here. Even if we do say that we're quite good, that's not particularly the reason why it's happening. So what do you think Eric Winstrom's answer is going to be on this? Remember, he's the Grand Rapids police chief and, you know, set to become the police chief here in Pensacola. How do you think he's going to answer sitting city councilwoman when she asks, well, you know, these numbers on crime drops, they're kind of taking place everywhere, right? What's he going to say?
You are very correct. Now, there are certainly outliers. There are cities across the country that have not followed that trend, but the city I'm coming from shared a similar drop in crime from 23. 2020 was certainly the pinnacle for most municipalities. That continued to 21. 22 got a little softer, and 23 and 24, we saw significant drops. So it is not, you can't credit police entirely, and but certainly I don't think it would be possible without a very professional police department here.
And I do agree with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the right answer. The crime has been dropping across the country. The reasons why are interesting. And Pensacola has been a beneficiary of that. And as he said at the end, of course, here we do have a very good policing force. And so we have crime drops, you know, in the county, in the city, in the area. Why? Well, partially because we have good police. Law enforcement gets better and better all the time. At least here it does. That's my belief is watching, you know, law enforcement over this area for the last 12, come into our 13th year that we've been living here. But also, there are big, fairly significant changes in society that are also affecting this trend. Number one, the availability of technology. You know, whether you like it or not, the flock cameras, the various forms of use of cameras, whether it's Ring cameras or whatever, ShotSpotter, and a host of other things, real-time crime centers. We have one here now. You know, places are getting this across the country. Use of drones. You know, all of these things have been very effective at fighting crime. Finding criminals, locking criminals up, making cases, putting them behind bars. When there are fewer criminals on the street, there are, you know, fewer crimes. That's sort of logical. That's one factor. Another factor, and we talked about this last week with Mike Wood, PIO for the Pensacola Police Department, is that when you have a society that changes how it behaves, you may have a change in the rate of crime. And obviously, one of the big answers there is the prevalence of technology. Cameras in particular is a big issue. But you also have a change in behavior of the demographic that's most responsible for committing crime. That's men, age, say, 14 to 30, particularly unattached men, are the big source of crime. And what you're finding with men, age 14 to 30, is that instead of going out and partying, instead of going out and having sex, which is also a common enough thing historically, and going out and drinking, doing drugs, whatever, all the different things that unattached single men do, they are at home gaming. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Enough of them that it makes a difference in the rate of crime. You have, it's just true. There's this, some people are calling it the sexpocalypse, which is that people are not fooling around at a young age. And you say, well, that's awesome. Is it? I mean, I hate to be the conservative who believes in waiting until you're married, you know, to go on the radio and say, well, the rate of sex is down, and that's not great. You know, you would tend to think that's awesome. They're medicated into isolation by their video games. Yeah, but that makes what kind of people and what kind of populations and what kind of, if they even get married, what kind of marriages? You know, again, yeah, it's good. There's fewer abortions and fewer unwanted pregnancies because people aren't having sex and are not out partying. But they're all, like, glued to their phones and their computers. And I don't think it's any exaggeration to say that is dramatically shaping the kind of people we're making and the number of people that we're making and the kinds of relationships that we're having in this, you know, the status of our culture. So it also means they're not out getting into trouble. But at the risk of being the one conservative on the radio who's going to sort of come out and sound like he's almost pro-crime, it's healthy, normal, even maybe necessary for a society to have rambunctious, sexually eager, unattached young men who become the kind of men who pursue women and make marriages and then make businesses and engage in activities that build society and productivity and everything else. And I'm very worried because we've never seen this before. And what's the long-term result of this? Well, we don't know yet because we're on the sort of the front edge of it. You know, check back in 20 years. We'll see. But it doesn't look great. So back to the main point. Crime is down. Yes. PPD is good. Yes. Escambia County Sheriff's Office is good. Santa Rosa, Gulf Breeze, everybody's good at policing. But also technology in terms of fighting crime and technology in terms of changing the culture so that the kind of people who would normally engage in criminal activity just aren't at anywhere near the rate they were. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that nobody's out doing crimes. Obviously, they still are. But enough fewer of them are doing it so that you see 20 and 30% drops in the kinds of crimes that we're having to, you know, deal with. Also, is he, he said that. Eric Winstrom said that. Across the country, we're seeing this. Is he moving here?
We are very proud of Pensacola. We're glad that you've come. You've got quite a resume. And this really is, you're going to make that big move from Michigan down here?
Yeah, down in February. Who would do that?
Yeah. I don't know. But so you're.
We're excited. I already have a contract on a house in the city. And I have a 14-year-old son, 12-year-old daughter. We already have schools picked out and plans, and they'll be here in 13 days.
And so you're planning to live within the city limits?
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Yep, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, welcome to Pensacola.
That's really, I want this job, but I want to be part of the city in every way.
What a great answer. Not just I want to be in the city that I'm policing, but I want to be in the city. Like, I'm eager to be a part of the city, which is a very interesting way to say it. And, of course, his family's moving here, and then the vote.
See, no further discussion, so let's vote. All right, passes unanimously.
Yeah, 7-0, which is 100% no surprise. What did I say all last week? It's going to pass unanimously. I'd be amazed if anybody dissented, and nobody did, thank goodness. 521 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, can you blow up some balloons for Jack's party?
I can't. I'm so congested.
You need Sinex Saline from Vicks.
Sinex Saline nasal spray?
Yeah, just Sinex. Breathe.
Sinex Saline instantly clears everyday congestion associated with colds and year-round allergies with a gentle, ultra-fine mist that's no mess and easy to control.
Daddy, we need more balloons!
On it!
Enjoy life's important moments without congestion. Try Sinex Saline from Vicks. Just Sinex. Breathe. Use as directed.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Oh, how's that flu, babe? Did you take DayQuil Intense Flu yet?
Nah, I got this. Ugh, okay, I don't got this.
You stay on the couch, and I'll grab the DayQuil.
Undo your flu symptoms with DayQuil Intense Flu. DayQuil Intense Flu provides powerful relief of your flu symptoms.
I'm ready for that to-do list.
Wow, you do got this.
DayQuil Intense Flu. The daytime coughing, aching, fever, under your flu, medicine. Use as directed, keep out of reach of children.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin, weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
I am not a hero. I'm a drifter with nothing to lose. You killed that girl to put me in a frame. I mean to beat you to death and drink your blood from a boot.
breath and drink your blood from a pool.
I'm ready, Slick.
When I hear that, all I can think is,
girl,
boots are dirty. 5:23 on News Radio 92.3 Informative.
That's all you think about with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, what would be an alternate like container for the blood that you're gonna drink? It would be like a pint glass, a teacup.
That's where your brain went.
A teaspoon. I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, something slightly more sanitary. I mean, if you're going to drink blood, you don't want to drink it from somebody's,
well,
you know,
if you're
foot
drinking,
container.
If you're drinking blood to begin with, I don't think it matters.
Yeah. I mean, there's better and worse ways to drink your enemy's blood after you beat them to death, I suppose. And, you know, not to, you know, be the guy who disagrees with Jack Reacher on the radio. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David? No, he's almost there. Rushing back.
Now
with his
I'm in the newsroom.
In hand.
Yes,
look at
absolutely.
That timing, sir.
Wow, that was impeccable. Let's see here.
One, two.
You caught me off guard.
Three.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about this.
Four.
Here we go. All right, I got it now. So an Iranian diplomat says Tehran is working towards securing a nuclear agreement with the U.S., Iran and the U.S. are scheduled to hold nuclear talks in Geneva Tuesday this week. Meanwhile, the Pentagon has deployed a second aircraft carrier to the region as the White House weighs military options if talks are not successful.
It seems unlikely to me that we would engage in, I mean, what exactly against Iran? We already took out the nuclear capability, right, with that strike in conjunction with the
supposedly,
Israelis.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, menacing with a second aircraft carrier, you know, is Trump's legacy really going to be another land war in the Middle East? You know, it just doesn't, I don't know, but we'll see. You know, maybe they believe him, maybe they don't, I don't know.
Well, there's a new report out that says Americans bore the brunt of the cost of tariffs. Data from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York shows American consumers and companies paid almost 90% of the cost of the tariffs through late 2025. A report from the Nonpartisan Tax Foundation shows the tariffs amounted to a tax increase of about $1,000 per household last year.
No way. You mean it's what 100% of the economists said would happen and 0% of what Trump said would happen? Come on.
I know.
Surely that can't be right.
It seems
we're
going to
make
unlikely.
China pay the tariffs. Yep. Come on now. Come on.
And,
that's not how this works.
Warner Brothers Discovery is reportedly considering an amended sales offer sent last week by Paramount Skydance. According to Bloomberg, Warner Brothers is currently a partner with Netflix, and it could initiate another bidding war. Contract terms seem favorable, and it offers to cover $2.8 billion in penalties for breaking the Netflix contract.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. 5:26 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and very interesting. John, I think you were here. Have we talked about the change in the rifles that the Army is going to be using because they're going from the 5.56 round to the 6.8-millimeter round?
Yes.
Okay. And the big claimed advantage of this is stopping power. You know, one round stops them rather than two. It's kind of the way it's been expressed by some people. You know, farther range, better accuracy. I mean, a larger round is going to have both of those advantages. What's the disadvantage of going to a 6.8-millimeter round? Well, it's heavier. Since it's heavier, that means that you're going to carry, do the math with me, more of them or fewer of them when you go out on a deployment, when you go out on a run. Fewer. Because you can only carry so much weight total. And, you know, so instead of carrying, let's say, 300 rounds, you carry 200 rounds, which is actually the number they're talking about because the magazine size is now 20 instead of 30. So instead of having, you know, 10 mags at 30 apiece, you have 10 mags at 20 apiece. So you go out and you only have 200 shots instead of 300 shots. Okay, that's one level of, you know, concern. Another is a brand new weapon made by SIG, which is, you know, obviously been tested, but until something's been deployed in war, you know, the best of ideas might be amazing, might be terrible. You got to actually see it in action before you see. Okay, so the Army is in the process of converting both the, you know, squad assault weapons and also the regular rifles. The SAW is what you would think of as, like, you might think of as an M60. M249 is what it had been. Anyway, they're converting that one over, and also the M4, which is the sort of more modern version of the M16. Anyway, they're converting over the 6.8 millimeter round. The Marines, meanwhile, are like, can we just see how it works for a little while? Because the Marines actually, and I guess I feel dumb, I hadn't realized this, the Marines had already transitioned several years ago away from the M4 to the, what is the number? It's had it in front of me and then I moved it, the M27. Now, I do not know enough about gun manufacturing and operation to distinguish them, but it is a slightly different operation than the M4, and it's based on HK instead of a Colt concept, and they did this several years ago. The barrel design is a little bit different. The premise of it was to give every Marine a saw, a light assault weapon, or a light automatic weapon. So it would have a higher rate of fire so that it would be a little bit more accurate, hold heat better, you know, not hold heat better, be more accurate long term. But essentially, the M249 was supposed to be replaced entirely, and so they didn't quite do that. But then they went to the M27 instead of the M4. Short version of this is they're waiting to see because the Marines think, well, we've got a weapon that we like better than the M4, and I don't know that we're quite ready to just totally jump on board with this brand new evolution in the type of ammunition because we like the fact that we've got a better weapon. It's about three to four times as expensive as the M4. We've got a better weapon that has a higher rate of fire that is more accurate and has a longer range than the M4. And it doesn't require us to change to a completely new type of ammunition. So we're familiar with this one, which also means that we don't have to give up the number of rounds we carry with us when we go out, into battle. So it's interesting to me to kind of watch this, not jostling exactly, but the Marines saying, we're just going to wait a few years and kind of see how it goes before we convert our entire stockpile over to what you're doing.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. It's week 3 in the search for Nancy Guthrie. Her daughter, today's show host, Savannah Guthrie, posting a new video on Instagram.
To whoever has her or knows where she is, that it's never too late.
Officials in Pima County, Arizona, have not identified a person of interest or suspect in her disappearance. Day 3 in the shutdown for the Department of Homeland Security. The money for DHS dried up at 12:01 a.m. Saturday. Tennessee Republican Congressman Tim Burchett speaking to Fox bashing Democrats.
They have no real agenda other than to disrupt President Trump's agenda, and that's America's agenda.
Women's hockey at the Olympics today. Team USA takes on Sweden in the semifinals. 10:40 a.m. Eastern, they'll drop the puck. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3, 57 degrees. We've got cloudy skies this morning. Of course, we'll get to our full forecast. Brooke Richardson has that for us up in just a few minutes. Well, thousands of revelers attended the Grand Mardi Gras Parade in downtown Pensacola on Saturday. More than 200 crews took part. Safety, of course, was a top priority with anti-vehicle devices on loan from FDLE. Barriers and safety personnel were stationed around the route as well. Rob Hess, emergency management coordinator for the city, said the incident plan worked very well. Friday night's parade had minor delays when bomb techs checked out a suspicious item that was ultimately cleared. City and county personnel worked together at a unified command center in City Hall with video feeds from cameras and drones along the route. Shalimar Cheers Pub on North Eglin Parkway was damaged in a fire yesterday. The fire broke out about 7 a.m. in the kitchen and extended out into the building's attic. Ocean City Fire Chief Jeff Wagner says an employee started the cooking equipment and noticed the flames a short time after. The employee had tried to put out the fire before calling 911. Nobody was hurt. The building did sustain heavy damage. Well, 4 more people have been arrested in a scheme to defraud Florida taxpayers out of $1.7 million. That brings the total to 10 arrests. State officials say a state employee processed more than 220 fake property damage claims through the Division of Risk Management. CFO Blazing Golia calls it one of the most brazen internal fraud schemes in recent years. Investigators are still looking for a second suspect, Curtis McClendon. Well, parking was an issue for attendees at Sunday's Crew of Wrecks Beach Parade. Lena Karras says she circled for over 45 minutes before finally parking on the side of the road in the grass near the old Margaritaville. The crew of Rex advised people to arrive at least 3 hours early to make sure they could find a spot. Lyric Crook says that pre-staged floats took up several hundred parking spaces in the main Casino Beach Boardwalk parking lot. She's calling for a parking garage to better utilize that space. The crew of Rex has hosted the annual parade on the beach since 1979. Rick Scott says Democrats should stop pitching a fit and reopen the government. Scott wrote on X yesterday that, quote, if you notice slower lines and longer waits at airport security, thank Democrats who shut down the government and are holding TSA funding hostage in an effort to defund ICE. Scott said that hardworking Americans don't deserve to be pawns in a political game. It is 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be looking at a beautiful day today with temperatures warming up near 69 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 55. For Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 68 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 61 degrees. Heading into Wednesday, a few more passing clouds with a high near 73. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 62. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
57 degrees, partly cloudy. Right now, our next news at 6. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Ladies, join us to be the impact in 2026. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, a women's organization that has given over $18 million to nonprofits right here. Meet other members and hear about the impact our funding has made at meet and mingle sessions through mid-February. Women 18 and older are invited to join us by March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org. That's impact100pensacola.org.
Do you have questions regarding your plants and landscaping? If so, The Garden Line is for you. I am Mike Wiggins, and every Tuesday morning at 9, we are here for you on News Radio 92.3 to answer your questions. Seasonal changes call for different activities in your lawn and garden, so tune in and text or call with your questions on The Garden Line on Tuesdays at 9 and an encore each Saturday at the same time.
The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel, Tuesdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night, it's another gallery night party in downtown Pensacola. But move to around Plaza Ferdinand, Government, and surrounding area due to construction on Palafox. Enjoy the art vendors, music, food, and the fun of the Pensacon theme. Saturday, check out the Palafox Market from 9 till noon. North Palafox will be filled with farm fresh produce, plants, baked goods, and more, with over 200 vendors. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
You don't have to keep jumping around the dial all day.
Start your morning with Pensacola Morning News, weekdays 5 to 9. Stick around for Pep Talk with Meg from 9 to 11. Then it's MVR from 11 till 2, Hughes Hewitt from 2 to 4, and Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin from 4 to 7. One station, one day, everything you need to know. News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Informative, local, dependable.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC News, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
More a solo. But tonight...
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. Putting suckers in fear. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Explosion.
538 on News Radio 92.3.
What's that face, John?
I'm so proud of you. I was like, yeah, I don't know if, but
he knew it. I was like, whoa, look at this.
This is like you knowing country music is me knowing the lyrics of LL Cool J songs. Her heels tall, her bikini small. She said she liked the ocean. So, all right. You don't know that? Going back to Cali? Nothing?
Yes.
Oh, you do know.
I guess I'm surprised.
I feel a little bit vaguely insulted.
You shouldn't.
Okay, fair enough. on Friday, we had a good chance to talk to our friend Alex Andrade, who is the state representative for District 2. That's the, you know, very beachfront portions of Santa Rosa County and then, of course, all of Escambia County up to about the city, roughly. It's not quite I-10, but it's close vicinity. There's some parts of Michelle Salzman's district, District 1, that go down south of that. But anyway, that vicinity, vaguely speaking. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Good to have you. All right, let's talk about some of the things that happened this week. I want to start with you guys are working on, obviously, budgets have come out. The House, I guess the House and the Senate both released budgets. I thought the Senate was going to be waiting for the House to do. What happened here?
So there was some private back and forth consternation about who should release their budgets first in the Senate. Was finally just frustrated. I guess they just said, we're not going to do anything until next week. And then we released our budgets yesterday at 5. I think it was after my committee yesterday morning when I didn't present my budget like they hoped I would, and I just said I presented it to, you know, the speaker. They made an announcement saying, we're not going to do anything. And then we released our entire budget at 5 p.m. yesterday, and the Senate scrambled and sent a notice that they're going to do theirs today. So we'll have the House and the Senate's proposed budgets both out by the end of the day today. And then we'll get to start working towards hopefully wrapping up session on time.
One of the things that you worked on in your committee related to budgets has to do with trying to make a dent in infant mortality, the, you know, early unnecessary death of children through health care related things. Is that right?
Yeah. So what I put in my proposed budget in my what's called a conforming bill is this idea to try and make these Medicaid companies compete. We don't have any real competition in Medicaid right now, even though we turned over running Medicaid to private companies. Like, the idea being, you know, let's inject some private capitalism concepts into Medicaid to hopefully drive value and savings for taxpayers. But we've never actually made them compete on anything. So my proposal is to make these companies compete. The state will withhold 2% of their revenue. And the companies that reduce infant mortality the most in that year will get to keep 2% of their revenue. Companies that reduce infant mortality at all will keep at least 1% of their revenue. And if your rate of infant mortality goes up in a given year, you will have what's called a freeze on your assignment, on auto assignment of new members, new lives, for about 4 months. So there's a pretty big stick and some pretty good carrots in there to try and actually inject some competition into this market that looks a lot more like socialism than capitalism right now.
Well, especially if, I mean, you're basically talking about rewarding them, paying them, incentivizing them to really care about the end result of saving kids' lives and punishing them if they fail to successfully save kids' lives. I love the idea. What is, just for, you know, ordinary people might be wondering, how much can a percent or two really matter to these companies? What kind of money are we talking about?
Well, it's overall, it's like a 50-some-odd billion-dollar budget, and so with a B, so 2% is a big deal.
That's 2% would be $100 million, I think, right?
You're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions every year that the state will either not pay out or pay out.
Wow. Okay. All right. I may have got my math quickly.
Each Medicaid plan is slightly different. Well, no, I mean, it's several billion dollars, right, in the program. What is 1% of?
Oh, no, a billion. I knew I was off by a digit. Yeah, $1 billion is what you're talking about. 2% of 50 billion is a billion.
Yeah, that's right. It's early, Andrew, for me to be doing math. But yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, you know, save kids' lives. It seems like a fairly straightforward thing. Very good. We also, you were actually one of the people advocating the bill that is going to help us get rid of these derelict vessels. It came out of Escambia County, right? Is our local, kind of our government is the one that came up with this idea, right? Was it Chips or Tim Day or who was it?
Yeah, it was Chip and Tim Day, just Kirchenfeld and Tim Day. So I presented it in its second committee yesterday, so it has one more committee before it goes to the floor. But the idea is it takes forever for us to do the paperwork on these these derelict vessels to get them removed from waterways. So the idea is to allow local code enforcement officers to do a lot of the paperwork stuff, the pre-criminal stuff, before FWC can come in and actually remove these derelict vessels, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. So local code enforcement can come out, paper the file, cite these vessels if they're breaking rules or laws, and then have a file all teed up and ready to go so that when FWC is contacted by the county, there's a file ready, and FWC, really all they have to do is come out and remove the vessel.
Huh. I mean, I would think that would substantially unburden the state and make for facilitation of these derelict boat removals, which would be great. I mean, we all see them when you're out on the water. This has been a problem for forever. So just expediting that process, big win, right? If it comes, do you have a Senate companion?
Yeah. So Jay Tremble is the sponsor in the Senate. And then we started working language on the other bills as well. So it's an odd year, Andrew, between the House and the Senate for bills. I mean, there's almost no companion bill between the House and the Senate on anything of true significance. So the fact that I have a companion bill that's also moving is a big deal. But just in case somehow something gets hung up, I'm adding language to other bills as well, trying to make sure, you know, language is in some bill and it ultimately gets signed.
Right.
It's a process of, you know, trying to find different, you know, no pun intended, like lifeboats to add things to. And my conforming bill as part of my budget will become a lifeboat for a lot of healthcare bills, most likely. So it'll become very large over time. It'll become like a train. It's just an odd year as far as us matching up between House and Senate policy priorities.
Are we in the state of Florida going to be out $500 million for the money we spent on immigration enforcement that the feds aren't going to repay, some of which has come under scrutiny for being, let's just say, squishy on target?
Yeah, we learned last week that because Governor DeSantis had promised that the $500 million he'd spent on this illegal immigration, like Alligator, Alcatraz kind of stuff, would all be 100% reimbursed by the federal government, and none of that money's come. What we found out last week was, while FEMA apparently had like tentatively agreed to pay, the Department of Justice had held it up. No one's quite sure why. But this past week, reporters started delving into the actual money that was spent by the DeSantis administration in this illegal immigration tranche of money that they're asking to be reimbursed. And some of it is raising some eyebrows. I'd say there's, you know, $2,000 over two nights at a place called Liberty Bar in Tallahassee, which, if you're familiar with, you know, Tallahassee food establishments, it's not a place that you go to during an emergency. It's a fancy restaurant. There's a couple of those in there. There's a lot of money being spent on private plane travel. And then some odd expenditures on hotels. Again, hotels that aren't necessarily ones you think about during emergencies, like the Margaritaville. So again, there's probably reasonable explanations for the vast majority of this stuff. But at the same time, trust is earned, and the DeSantis administration has been spending money like their hair's on fire on random things. And they just admitted this past week they used opioid trust fund money on campaign ads. So it's just an odd time right now trying to figure out how exactly the DeSantis administration cares about taxpayer dollars.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, we'll wait for the numbers. As you say, probably in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to add up to $450 or $405 million, but it could be a lot. And if the federal government doesn't reimburse us, then, you know, we're on the hook for it, which is a problem. And again, you know, $500 million, I mean, eventually it adds up to be real money. Hey, two bills that got voted on the floor this week I wanted to ask you about. The first one is a bill that you voted yes on, and that is to remove all references to the West Bank in Israel. That's the area west of the Jordan River where the Palestinians primarily live, even though Israel owns it and also is the governing structure. To refer to that as Judea and Samaria instead. You know me, I hate language change bills. We all know what the West Bank is. Nobody knows what Judea and Samaria is except if they read their Bibles, and they already know what that area is anyway. The one thing that kind of turned me around on this, actually, I'm kind of curious why you voted for it, but I did do a little research, and apparently the Knesset last year passed a similar bill where they are now referring to it as Judea and Samaria. Was that the reason for this change, not us initiating it?
Well, it was a name change that just seemed to be more historically accurate. You know, if we're not recognizing and appreciating what the country itself wants to call things, I don't know what we're doing. So, just a different way to think about history. And, you know, I appreciated the interesting debate on it. Like, unlike you, Andrew, I was okay voting on things like the Gulf of America.
Mexico.
as well. just because, every now and then the names of things do change. So,
I know what you mean, Aaron.
The opposite. In this circumstance, it's the opposite. It's, we should probably, correct our own language to be more accurate and historically correct.
The other bill, and we might talk about this some more, but I was very much against this in the beginning, but as I read that the Knesset had done it, and the reason is to sort of remind people of who actually owns both now and historically that region, that we would use that name. Everybody knows what the West Bank is, and language is supposed to communicate content, but I'm a little more on the fence on this one now. The other one, and this is the one, I don't know what your explanation is going to be, and I can't imagine you actually having one, but I know you're a smart guy, so you usually will. Why do you hate flamingos? Why is Alex Andrade the only guy in the House of Representatives to vote no on making the flamingo the state bird?
When was the last time you saw a wild flamingo in Pensacola, Andrew?
That wasn't attached to a mobile home yard? No, not ever.
So, right now the state bird is the mockingbird. It's been the mockingbird for a century. This push was to change it to the flamingo and to also make the Florida scrub jay the official songbird of the state. We have a lot of pelicans here, right?
Right.
But we don't have a lot of scrub jays. Scrub jays are Central Florida, and flamingos, if they are in way, way South Florida. So I don't think it represents my area of the state. Plus, if you're familiar with a woman named Marion Hammer,
mm-hmm.
She was the NRA lobbyist for decades. She was inimitable. She's been a great lady. And back in 2018, I promised I'd never disappoint her with my votes. And she's a huge fan of the mockingbird.
Okay.
And so it was a bit of a throwback, an homage to Marion, who's now retired from the NRA as their lobbyist. But it was just a little bit of a throwback, a recognition of her. And also, a reminder to folks, represent your districts. If it doesn't help your district and it's not exactly representative of your district, why vote for it?
Well, you had originally, when this was in committee, I very specifically remember you saying you were going to ask for the pelican to be added as the water hunting or waterfowl hunting or something like that. I don't remember what the word was, but it was going to be, you were going to try to add the pelican. Since we're already going to have the flamingo and the scrub jay, let's have the pelican for its sort of slice of the state bird share. That never happened?
No, unfortunately, I didn't, shockingly, Andrew, I didn't spend a lot of time worrying about this one, one way or the other. But I did make some jokes about the pelican. It's flamingos don't represent Pensacola. They don't look like Pensacola at all. The flying fish would be a more accurate state bird if we're taking Pensacola into account.
It wasn't
representing my area.
Yeah, I was going to say the one thing, though, about this is since you wound up being the only one to vote no on this, you got to assume that James Uthmeyer and Ron DeSantis are preparing the Why Does Alex Andrade Hate Flamingos campaign. So, just sometimes you got to vote your conscience or your relationship, and you just got to suffer the political consequences. I hope you're term limited out, so I hope you survive.
I'll take those slings and arrows, and hopefully it spares a couple of flamingos.
Alex Andrade, state representative for District 2, as always. Alex, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you.
I'll take those slings and metal mounting rods. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I do think it's funny he was the only one to vote against it and didn't know that, a lot of times you don't know what's going to happen in the vote. Tallahassee's weird. Like, they can, sunshine law doesn't really apply to them the same way it applies to our local officials. So they can do like my understanding anyway, is that they can do whip counts and things like that. But, you know, nobody told Alex he was going to be the only one to vote against this. It's cute. But it makes perfect sense to me. His answer is perfect. If we're going to have a state bird, I mean, I've never seen one here. Never seen a flamingo. I mean, we have seen them.
Front yards.
Yeah, right. And you do, I think you occasionally have seen them in the area. They're not, you know.
I've seen them here before.
Just, you know, moving through kind of things. But right. Anyway, I thought that was kind of a funny answer. 554 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Princeton Grove, a new affordable housing community in Crestview, is now taking applications for 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. Princeton Grove features a resort-style swimming pool, pickleball court, dog park, state-of-the-art fitness center, Energy Star rated appliances, granite countertops, and for a limited time, Princeton Grove is offering 1 bedroom apartments for $849 and 2 bedrooms at $1049 with no application fee. Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview. Location, community, quality living. All starts at Princeton Grove.
Our Senators Ashley Moody and Rick Scott and Representative Jimmy Patronis are standing up for radio listeners like us by supporting legislation to keep AM radio in cars. They know the value of local radio in times of emergency. Now it's time for Congress to finish the job and pass the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act. Learn more at dependonam.com. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Join Kenny Chartel from Affordable Automotive Gulf Breeze for Car Care tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Kenny will be sharing his years of expertise on car maintenance, as well as tips and loads of great advice that'll keep your car running in top shape. Whether foreign or domestic, don't miss Car Care tomorrow at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
We are Firestone! We are
Good morning. Happy Monday. Great to be with you this morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Savannah Guthrie making another appeal as the search for her mother, Nancy, now enters its third week. Guthrie shared a new video on Instagram Sunday pleading for the person who took her mother to come forward. And she addressed whoever has her and said that wherever they are, that it is never too late. California preparing for a wet week. Apparently a bunch of rain and snow there. And a Pokemon card, Andrew, setting the world record for the most expensive trading card ever sold at auction. Apparently it sold for $16.5 million.
It's a little bit more than my Ron Say card.
This was a Pikachu Illustrator card, one of 40 made in 1998 for a contest. And apparently this was actually the card that Logan Paul bought for $5.2 million a few years back.
First he's fighting Mike Tyson, and then he's buying Pokemon cards, and then
he's
dating.
No, this is Logan Paul. You're thinking of Jake Paul.
Oh, they're two different people?
They're brothers.
So they're two different people.
Well, supposedly.
I couldn't possibly care less about who these people are.
I mean, do we want to have a nuanced discussion on the Paul brothers? Because we're good. You know, Jake Paul's a boxer.
Which is the one that's dating the Danish speed skater, the woman from the Netherlands.
Oh, I didn't know either of them were.
The most good-looking, but the, like, second or third and the fastest.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Yeah, same here.
I'm not a big expert.
As far as I'm concerned, they're one person. I'm going to stick with that. David, thanks so much for the update. 558 on News Radio 92. You know, whatever. I cared only enough to make a joke. That's the limit of my interest. What else do we have going on? Nah. I don't care about any of that stuff.
I'm just up here going. Yeah.
I was looking over on my list of all the stories I could talk about this morning. I'm like, I'm not really motivated by any of those. I will say this: the parade was fun. Parade was great fun. Mardi Gras parade on Saturday. Took the new route, avoiding Palafox. Which, by the way, have you had a chance to go look at Palafox since it's been torn up, John?
No.
You been downtown?
No, I haven't.
I keep thinking I should go downtown and look. Well, I was downtown. I was literally walking past the construction site going back to my car. I thought, oh, I'll walk the length of Palafox and shoot some video and pictures and whatever. And it's pretty wild looking.
So there was no parking on Palafox?
No. Okay. Except for the backhoe and the, Bobcat and stuff like that. They were moving around. They were even doing work on Saturday. The new route on Jefferson is fun. I like it. It's wide open. You know how Palafox is very kind of closed in? And it's hard to get a lot of people. I mean, you get a lot of people, but it's very packed in. That creates a certain ambiance, of overcrowdedness. Jefferson was packed, but didn't have that same feel of being close in. I liked it. I thought it was neat. More open to the air, wider street. I kind of liked it. I liked it a little bit better than Palafox. I mean, they're different. I don't know. So probably not going to, probably won't keep doing it once Palafox is finished. But it was an interesting, a lot of people seem to like it better. Local.